You're listening to Around Comics, episode 269, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and C2E2.
I believe the stars keep shining on through the night. I believe if we just keep trying, it'll be all right. I believe that someday we're gonna find our way. And I believe in a beautiful day.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, please drop by. Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman. Let's get you introduced to this panel. It's not all new because it is the same panel as last week. We had some good conversation going. We want to carry over as we teased, right, John?
Sure.
Yeah. We have Mr. John Suntress.
Hi.
Ms. Jenny Frizen.
Hi.
And Mr. Kyle Bice.
Hola.
Hola. ¿Cómo está?
Hi, he's multilingual.
Está bien.
Good to have you guys back. Let me remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com. We're waiting for the trade. Has never been easier. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, omnibuses, absolutes, showcases, and more, all at great discounted prices. Remember that all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free, including our book club selection, which is the Alien Legion Omnibus of Volume 1 by Dark Horse Comics. It's originally Epic, but now it's being reprinted beautifully by Dark Horse, I might add.
You know you're a comic nerd when you get excited that it is a different publisher from the original, because I felt that way when Dark Horse did the Conan and the Solomon Kane stuff. And now, did you see in previews, DC is repackaging all the Doc Savage stuff from Marvel from the early 70s, and it's like, oh, but I remember when it was Marvel. This is amazing. You can't help it, man.
Hey, I don't know about these people, but I was not a big fan of the Checker reprints of Alien Legion. So
okay,
it's the Dark Horse did a fantastic job.
I'll give it up to Checker for the at least releasing the Steve Canyon reprints, even though they were slightly reduced in size. It was good to see Milton Caniff stories back in print.
That's good stuff. You can pick up the Alien Legion Omnibus for 45% off the cover price at InStockTrades.com. Oh, and I forgot to mention last week, the Summit City Comic-Con.
Yeah, I didn't want to step on you while you were doing the read for them, but yes, let's talk about
it. Honestly, I've forgotten to add it to our notes, but the fine folks at Discount Comic Book Service and InStockTrades.com are putting on their own convention, very similar to Windy City.
Yes,
in kind of its scope and size. It's very creator-focused. They're going to be very friendly to kids and families there. It's happening in Fort Wayne, and it is...
It's in May, and it's late May. I want to say May 20th or something like that.
Sounds about right.
Forgive us.
SummitCityComicCon.com?
Indeed. And the convention center is a beautiful building, so I'm excited about that. But no, really,
in beautiful Fort Wayne.
And I think a lot of the Midwest best creators are going to be showing up for this.
What
was that one for?
I've never been. I don't know. I'm not judging.
I've been.
Hey, it's the middle of Indiana, but for one day, it is going to be a comicopia.
Now, in fairness, because we've visited... In Stock Trades and Discount Comic Book Service in their store. And their store is on like in an industrial park, and it's in a big kind of warehouse. I mean, that is their basis. They're a mail order business, obviously. Have you been in this in town in Fort Wayne?
Yeah,
it is a pretty town.
Dude,
it's very Mayberry-like in a good way.
I grew up in Southern Illinois.
All right.
Fort Wayne, Indiana is like
is that your backyard?
Shangri-La compared to where I grew up.
I'm not far from you.
I had family that came from Fort Wayne, and honestly, it was a long ass trip going to Fort Wayne.
But once
we got there, it was a nice, pretty little town.
The question you ask people where I grew up is, what trailer park do you live in?
The one on the north side or the south side?
No. It's Summit City's going to be great. You know, Robert Atkins is going to be there. Norton's going to be there. Mm-hmm. Sealy's going to be there. You're going to be there, aren't you?
Maybe.
Oh, dude.
I hope so.
Dude,
we'll see. Maybe Jenny will be there. Who knows?
Jim freaking Rugg is going to be there.
Jim Rugg's coming. Exactly.
Wow.
You know, so that's really cool. And
Burnham.
I think we need to get over there.
Burnham's going
to
be there. Exactly. I think Scotty's.
If Burnham's there, we have to.
Steve
Bryan will be there. It's going to be Voltaire.
It's going to be a great group.
Yeah, it really is. It's going to be a nice show and a very artist centric show. It'll be great. So, SummitCityComicCon.com.
Sounds good.
Check out all the information.
Yeah. Cool. It should be fun. Mark's looking at us like...
We couldn't figure it out.
Yes.
Me and Hank were just trying to go, what the fuck are they talking about? you're like, whatever, rug. We're like, what? Who?
Jim, hey, do you have aphrodisiac? Do you have
rug.
Did you get
aphrodisiac? $5.
Did you get aphrodisiac? Here, the Jim Rugg book.
Yeah.
Is it here?
Human horn.
Mark has a big selection of aphrodisiacs.
If you have it, I want it.
If you've got more than one copy, I'll take the second copy. The entire podcast is stalled as Mark is looking on the thing for aphrodisiac.
I can order it.
You can order it. Do you guys?
It's a well-stocked store.
Every trade in the universe in my store.
Who published aphrodisiac?
I'll walk out because I have no room.
What's that? Who published aphrodisiac?
Oh, shit, I forget. Vince would know if he were here. He is a big fan.
Would?
I bought it directly from their website. I forget what it is called.
It's not a Fanta, is it?
No, it's not a Fanta.
It's a pretty good wood.
Thank you.
Vince. Yeah, sorry, not wood.
Do you guys want to? You guys want to jump into some comics talk, or do we want to come back to our TV conversation?
Sure.
Want to recap for people who maybe didn't join us last
time? I tell you, let's jump into carry on our conversation from last week. We're talking about Geoff Johns as CCO for DC Entertainment, and we.
Creative Officer for DC Entertainment,
and,
CCO.
And we were talking about maybe some new DC TV properties, and you had mentioned Gotham Central, which I'm obviously a huge fan of.
Yes,
it's one of my favorite series that DC has probably ever put out. It was a fantastic Greg Rucka and Ed Brubaker collaboration. It was kind of a hard-boiled police procedural in Gotham, where Batman was kind of a background character to the Gotham Police Department.
Indeed.
It was so good.
Yeah, I mean, it was regular cops. It's like Powers, regular cops dealing with, super villain kind of crimes.
It's
crazy
where
crimes.
Renee Montoya really became a fleshed-out character for DC.
Josie Mack, Judd Winnick's character, got a much bigger profile in that book. And it was, my God, it was like as big of a cast as like a show like Hill Street Blues in terms of the cops. They followed the day shift and the night shift cops.
Yeah, it's a pretty obvious adaptation into TV that I think would be successful and would work, like you were saying last week. About how Heroes has sort of proven that there can be a mainstream audience for comic book themed television shows.
You know, honestly, and not taking anything away from Heroes, but really I think all that started with Buffy and Angel too, because they were superheroes with, you know, out the capes and everything. They really were.
My only concern with Gotham Central is that it's taking that one step further, and it's taking two now successful and known TV quantities, and that is the police procedural,
right.
And that's mixing with the superhero genre that has become very popular in movies and TV with Heroes and, you know, even the supernatural twist of Lost. For us, we're going to love it. For my wife, or for the average TV viewer, is a superhero meets police procedural gonna work? Because I think that people that would really enjoy the police procedural part of it are gonna shy away from it because it is Gotham.
Someone's gonna beat them.
I disagree.
You think it will work?
I think that well, if people are going to shy away from it, it's not going to be because they're like, well, it's comics, so I don't like it. I think it's going to be that they are either going to be like, I like this crime drama, I don't like this crime drama.
Yeah, it's its own matter. Well,
I don't think anyone's going to be turned off.
I think if they keep it as real as the Batman movies, the most recent Batman movies, they're going to draw in a huge audience.
Well,
like, as long as you keep spandex out of it, you're going to get a big audience.
If it's well done, it's well done. If it's a good crime drama people will like it.
Yeah.
If it is a good superhero show, superhero people will like it. If it's good at both, then you've got double the people that will.
Well, you know, it's like one of my favorite scenes in that series was it may have been the first issue, was you have this police scene, these guys that are going to break down this door, and they are normal, everyday cops in Gotham. And they break down this door, and their first reaction is, oh, shit, it's Dr. Freeze. And that...
Mr. Freeze.
It was Mr. Freeze, sorry. I got my doctors Dr. and Mr. and Captain
fuck
Cold.
Dr. Suntress.
It's Mr. Freeze. And so for reading a comic book, it's like, okay, yeah, these cops come in, and it's Mr. Freeze.
But,
you know,
but you're going for a literal translation. And also, by the way, let's halt the Gotham Central talk, because there's going to be... an attempt to do this before Gotham Central even gets on the drawing board, and that's, of course, Powers, which FX has in development.
I thought you were going to say Walking Dead.
It is going to be live action, and they have a showrunner in place, a guy who, and I forget his name right now, but it was one of the guys who was the showrunner for The West Wing, and I know Bendis is very pleased about that and very excited about the progress that it's made. Mm-hmm. They haven't started shooting the pilot yet, but they will apparently at some point this year. All indications are that that is going to move forward. And I would say, much like Heroes, I think the television and film people are very cognizant to keep any adaptation, to maintain it to be as realistic as possible. Mm-hmm. So while you might have elements of a Mr. Freeze, I don't think you're going to have a guy in the half.
You're not going to have Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, and you're certainly not going to have Arnold Schwarzenegger showing, time to ice you. Yeah. That's not going to happen.
Well, you know, as long as they don't make it like Dick Tracy-esque, where everything looks very plastic.
Yeah,
I would go the Dark Knight.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's going to be people with, like, again, like Bendis' thing, it's going to be people with powers. I don't expect to see costumes.
Yeah.
I think everyone is still, especially television, and based on our conversation last week when what Kyle was saying, what kept him from watching Absolute Justice, he saw the Hawkman outfit and said, "That looks goofy. I'm not watching." I understand.
You're a comic book fan.
Which says a lot, because I am a comic book fan, but that kind of stuff.
So I think they're very aware of that. It's the reason why
Tom Welling... Also, because it's Smallville.
And I was going to say, it's the reason why Tom Welling still isn't in the red and blue. You know,
just put on the fucking cape.
Which is silly.
They say that's the last episode. He's not Superman yet. As soon as he's ready to be Superman, time to end the show.
I think you have a good argument for... Then it could either go one way or the other, and whichever way it chooses, it'll turn off the other side. But I think there is a fine line, and I think that if they do it right, they can manage it.
Powers will be a great
Birds of Prey was wrong, again, going back to what we talked about last week, and they kind of played with costumes to a degree.
Mm-hmm. The most recent Batman movie, the Joker was not camp at all, and he was just effing terrifying.
Well, it was, I mean, they really...
Am I allowed to curse on this show?
Sure, of course you can.
Fucking terrifying.
Go for the gusto.
Have you ever listened to the show?
Joey.
I don't know.
I've
listened.
Trout.
I've listened, but I don't know if
Jenny
I don't...
Jenny Frizzin, I'm shocked.
No, I do. I know, sorry.
It's a trap.
Should be more clear.
Well, that's good news and bad news about Powers, because... Powers making it to TV is going to kill any chance for Gotham Central.
No, I think if anything, it might actually give it a shot in terms of, hey, it's working. Well, come on, guys. Copycat shows happen all the time in television. Look how we're still reinventing the X-Files with Sanctuary on the Sci-Fi Channel, Fringe on Fox. I mean,
have you seen Survivors on BBC?
Not yet. Is it good?
No, I was going to ask you. It looks good.
Yeah, the premise looks good. It's a post-apocalyptic world. It's, you know, survivors of a nuclear holocaust.
I don't know
what happens next the day after.
I'm really curious to see what's going to happen with Walking Dead too. It sounds like that's going to be amazing.
Is that a TV show or a movie?
Yeah, it's a TV.
They're going to make it a TV
really?
Show.
It's
AMC. AMC. Yeah. So
Frank Darabont,
the same people,
of film, you know, pedigree is running the show. But yeah, it's a AMC limited series.
Mad Men is AMC, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
but also, unfortunately, that's where the new prisoner came from too. So, you know.
I know. Well, you know, I'd heard that Warren Ellis had a TV show in development with AMC. I never heard anything.
Global Frequency. That was the last I heard of Warren.
I really like that pilot. By the way,
every comic fan loved that pilot. It was great.
Global Frequency. Did you ever see the pilot for it? Have you
wasn't
ever read
Wildstorm series? I believe.
Have you ever read Global Frequency?
Yes.
One of my favorite Warren Ellis books of all time. I think that is, 12 issues? That sound about right?
Yeah, I think it was 12. I think it went a full 12.
Yeah, if you haven't picked up those two trades, get them. They are the bomb.
Well, and speaking of, you said, not to take away from Heroes, but Buffy maybe was the first comic book-related television show that was really successful. I think, in this
kind of modern era.
It was successful because it was above its genre. It had something to say about reality. And I think that also, you know, I can't imagine that the ratings were very high that first season. Because nobody gave it a chance. But that's
the
problem with most TV shows now.
Fear.
Nobody gives anybody a chance. And in addition, it seems like often... people that make comic book TV shows are like, well, let's make a campy comic book TV show or a comic book TV show in general, they don't think, what can we say about the world that will really pull in viewers?
Enter Jeff Johns, hopefully.
Yeah, I was going to say, circle back to Jeff Johns.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you're going to have somebody who's going to hopefully stop the stupid Hollywood stuff that goes on where they're just like, oh, we want to make some money. Hopefully Jeff Johns will come in and say,
he did it in comics. He took ridiculous characters that had no modern relevance, and he's like, you know what? These characters, the core of these characters is so solid that, you know what? Alan Scott Green Lantern can be a relevant character in this universe. And he takes all these little bits and pieces and says, you know what? Yeah, the execution may have been campy and silly at one point, but the core of the idea is so cool, and you can do that with a modern voice. And that is his biggest gift.
If you can get a channel that will wait around for ratings for the second season, you know, then the people that are into that kind of thing, the sort of people that watched Birds of Prey that were like, this is probably going to turn out okay, and then we're terribly disappointed.
I hope we don't end up with another Blade.
Exactly.
Because it turned around at the end.
It had already been canceled.
Yeah.
Right. That's the problem. Right. If they can find a station that will wait it out, then I'll say we can turn this around because we have a genuinely good TV show.
Television, though, in general, is refiguring itself out because of the encroachment of the internet and the economy. And no, I think in a good way because look at what they're doing with V and Flash Forward. They ran a bunch of episodes, they put it on hiatus, and they're bringing it back. Now, I'm not crazy about that split season move. I think you lose an audience. But I do think that also, on the other side, all the basic channels always guarantee, the basic cable channels, FX, USA, and things like that, you are at least guaranteed 13 episodes. Mm-hmm. You're at least guaranteed one season. And it seems they have more patience to really examine and say, are we getting a following here?
Yeah.
So I do think that right now, again, as we're in this transition, and the networks are in the transition as well, I think there will be some give and take, and you will get a little bit more of an opportunity to develop a show. This Caprica, I think, is a good show that is, you know, kind of proving.
I was just going to bring BSG up as an example that did the split season where they would come out with half a season and then they'd go on, what, a 4-month hiatus?
Yeah, they counter program to the big networks and what they're doing. I mean, that's the thing.
2 weeks before they would start airing new programs, the half DVD set would come
out. That's true too.
The half season DVD set would come out, and you could shotgun all those episodes. Like, oh, well, I'm caught up now. I'll start watching again.
Plus, they're paying more attention to Hulu downloads. They're paying more attention to TiVo. They're paying more attention to Comcast on demand.
And that's everything on Hulu.
Well, honestly, Jenny, that's a perfect example. I mean, the television audience is literally changing. Appointment TV is changing. It's still in transition, and it's still the way the majority of people watch it, and the way that the advertisers are convinced that that's the best way to spend their money. But the game is slowly changing, and television will adapt. And also, thankfully, because of the failure of the Jay Leno show,
I was just going to say.
I mean, no, drama still matters. Thank God, because really, in this reality TV world, it was really getting to the point where I'm like, what the fuck?
Because much money to make any other show, reality television shows are so
cheap. They're cheap, exactly.
And then everybody watches. Everybody in America should be ashamed of themselves.
No shit.
Yeah, how much?
Yeah, I'll even cop to Joe Millionaire. I watched that one. At
See,
least.
Well, okay. Everyone, I've watched
at
least including one. You.
How much does it cost to make The Bachelor as opposed to Rome?
Right.
Yeah. You know? Exactly. Yeah.
Or Kings, that wonderfully ambitious show.
Well, tell you what, we've talked TVs, we've talked a little bit more about the DC moves. You guys want to come back and talk about some funny books?
Sure.
Yes, big old stack.
Absolutely.
We've been very DC-centric.
Yep.
I got a couple Marvels.
I've got a Marvel thing to talk about, too.
Why don't you, Kyle,
I want to talk about the future of Marvel. Something
future,
that's not even
future,
out yet.
Future, or the past.
The past and the future.
Oh, I know what you're going to talk about.
I'm looking at... X Factor Forever. Sorry, I'm looking at the title here.
Go ahead.
Louis, that sweet artwork is what you were looking at.
Louis Simonson and Dan Panosian. Wheezy.
Yay, Wheezy.
Dan Panosian. This stuff looks amazing. I've been following Dan's stuff online, and he's been posting a lot of this work, and it looks just like the stuff that I was reading when I was a kid, which was great.
At what point is this story picking up from where they left off?
I think it's right when she stopped, when she left the title.
So, like, this is when Walt Simonson took over writing?
I believe so.
Okay.
I don't remember the actual story where it's picking up from, but for folks that aren't familiar with what Marvel is doing with the Forever, I think it's a line now, the Forever lines, it's kind of similar to First Class, but different. First Class was kind of going in between the raindrops and telling stories that could fit into continuity, where these are
alternate continuities.
It's alternate, yeah. It's where it splits off, and X-Men Forever is basically Chris Claremont picking up and saying it's like I never left the book, and you know, and him doing his story.
And I think art wise, Dan Panosian is one of the perfect people for this. Like it's sort of a vintage yet modern style.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, you can see the Walt Simonson influences.
Big Walt Simonson.
Little angular, but still sort of cartoony.
And he still keeps, like, you look at the backgrounds and the uniforms on this, and it's got sort of the, like, early to mid 80s feel to it. It's pretty nice.
Yeah. I'm like happy and sad for Wheezy, because on the one hand, I'm happy that she's back writing comics again and doing it more often. But also, I just think she's a better writer and a better modern writer. I really, nothing against Chris Claremont personally, but it's pretty obvious why they've got him doing X-Men Forever. He's got that kind of contract. This book allows him to write his own stories and not have to be bothered by anybody else. And good for him. He's earned it. For all the money
he's earned it.
Honestly, man, that's not me. You know, I mean, that's totally fine, and there's an audience for it, and that's great.
Without the X-Men, we'd be talking about... Remember when Marvel published comics?
But I think Wheezy is still a very talented writer. I mean, I've read a lot of book adaptations that she's done, and original stories in novel form and stuff, and that's why I'm just like, you know, I think Wheezy's better than this. And again, no offense to X-Factor fans,
you just
and everything
off
else, but
a shit ton of X-Factor fans.
Well,
out there.
That's why I immediately said that. No offense, and I'm really happy that they're
going to kill you.
Exactly, you guys are getting the story that you want. That's awesome. I just think Wheezy can do other things. I mean, they honestly, Walt and Wheezy are just an amazing couple.
Yeah.
So much talent,
yeah.
And they are like so nice.
Yeah, they're
nicest crazy
people.
Nice.
I want them to adopt me. My family. Is amazing. Amazing,
Jenny,
on levels I can't even describe.
You know, really, if you were like
a, make a good daughter
if
to
you
them.
Were the pro that you
John's
are now,
be like,
20,
we can make that happen, Jenny.
No, what I was going to say is really, if you were the pro that you are now 30 years ago, they would have quasi adopted you because that's what they did. They were the New York couple that would welcome everyone that was coming to New York, and you could like crash on their couch for a couple months while you were
Simonson
finding your place.
Kissed me on the cheek one time.
He's
one of the highlights of my life.
Really? You know, saw him in Baltimore at the Baltimore Con this fall. And he's the man. He's just such a great guy. And he said he'd come back to Word Balloon in the spring. So
and to tell
I'm going
to
hold him to that.
To tell you how nice this guy is, I've never met him in my life. We don't know each other, but we're Facebook friends. I asked him a question once, some sort of inking question. It was just random. I was like, I'll never get an answer, but why don't I try? And he responded like within minutes.
That's awesome.
And I got a two-day conversation out of it with Walt Simonson. It was really nice.
They're part of that generation, like Marv Wolfman, like Len Wein. All of those great creators that came from the late 60s and early 70s that really, they were fans before, they were creators, and they get it.
They
and
understand.
They've never forgotten. And that's, Bendis has made it a mantra that it's like, in my professional life when I'm dealing with fans or young creators, my feeling is I want to be like Walt Simonson.
Yeah. Yep,
and
exactly.
Wheezy's the same way,
that's
too.
Cool.
They're just, they're generous people and happy to help and happy to give you their point of view if you want it. And also, they are so excited about the new projects they do.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing. Every time I see Walter, he's always got pages. And I was interviewing Rags Morales, and he showed up, and he was showing us all the work he was doing on Batlash when he was doing that miniseries.
Nice.
And then just in Baltimore and everything, he's got a big project coming up with DC and their generation stuff that they're going to be doing this year. And he was showing pages to Bendis and I. And it was just great. And really, he was so excited. He's like, Brian, I just got to show you this for 1 minute. He's like, Walter, as much time as you want. And everyone's just like,
are you kidding
me? Dude, you're Walter Simonson. Don't worry. And Wheezy's exactly the same way. So like I said, hey, I'm really happy for...
I'm going to start calling him Uncle Walt.
No kidding, man.
See if he goes for it.
Yeah, you know.
He'd probably dig it.
Hi, Uncle Walt. Are you listening to me? I love you.
Come here, cutie. Let me show you some pages.
Yes, please.
Not to hog all the time here, but to speak of Walt, did you guys check out Vigilante 11?
No.
Walt Simonson and Jean-Paul Leon doing the finishes over Walt's layouts.
And this is, again, what's so cool about Walter. He's like, he has taught me more about blacks than I ever thought of before. And it is so cool to hear a guy.
We're talking about.
Walter said that
shadows,
about John.
Using
shadows and blacks. Sorry, folks.
Just clarifying.
Times were different back then.
Exactly. How you doing? It's exactly. Wow. Thank you.
Jean-Paul's a certain type of guy.
That's how cool Walter is that he's learning things about art from the young people. And that's the thing. I mean, Walter, he's like Tony Bennett when it comes to music in terms of he's paying attention to what young people are doing and can apply it to his art and grow. And, yep. I mean, that's the thing. Walter is still growing as an artist.
Still?
You're right, man. I mean, and really, it's a shame that it had to happen on a book that's flying under the radar like Vigilante and at the end of this series, too. But it's very cool.
It was amazing to see those two working together.
I got a Marvel book that I'll mention. I love these 48-page black and white specials that Marvel has been doing in the last 6 months. Shang-Chi, they did it right at the end of 2009.
Cool.
And now we've got one in time for the Iron Man 2 movie. It's called The Indomitable Iron Man. This is about a month or two old. About a month old, because I think it came out at the beginning of February. And it's three stories. It's four stories, because there's a text story at the end. But they're short stories. Great creators are on it. Paul Cornell writes a story. Dwayne Swarzynski writes a story.
Nice.
Chaykin draws and writes a story. Mm-hmm. And
no
I know
shit.
Some people, yeah, some people are turned off by black and white art. I'm not one of those people.
Yeah,
and I know you're
on.
Not either, Chris. And that's
my point.
Oh, I love
black and white art.
That's cool. Well, you know, I think art people get it.
Well, yeah.
I just posted something on Twitter. I didn't know this existed. And Scotty was kind of scolding me. I was saying something about we need more black and white comics in the mainstream.
Yeah.
Dude, back in the day, in the 70s and in early 80s, it was the Marvel magazines, the black and white magazines, that I absolutely adored.
Yeah.
And that's why it's been so much fun. We talked earlier when we were talking about Dark Horse putting out the Robert Howard stuff, the Conan collections, and also the Solomon Kane collection that they came out with. I love it. I mean, it's just, beautiful art. A lot of Sal
Buscema. He was born on Tuesday.
Sal Buscema art. There was a very brief Doc Savage black and white that Doug Munch wrote, and I believe Sal Buscema was one of the artists on it. But you get these.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I really enjoyed those black and white comics is they weren't under the code.
Exactly.
I didn't know it at the time.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. You were getting more adult stories.
Oh, yeah. That. Daughters of the Dragon. You get Full Frontal. Sorry, young lady. Exactly.
Hey, man. Hey,
sorry, Uncle Walt. I just corrupted your child.
Hey, the
sorry,
the
Jenny does Full Frontal all the time. It's okay.
The Dracula comics?
Little Bush,
actually.
Yes.
Hey, Gene Colan drew Awesome Anatomy.
Well, yeah. Honestly, you got all the Filipino artists that were coming to the country. You got a lot of the Spanish artists and stuff. It's
Alex Nino.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's great grayscale
Spanish
black and white
Nino.
Art.
What?
Spanish for the Nino.
No, Alex
Nino. Alex
Nino.
No,
Nino.
Never mind.
You're making a joke. I'm sorry. It went right over
but,
my head.
But yeah, it's... No,
it should have been an inside joke. It just got
exciting. I think the stories are really great, and they're not your typical stories. And it's also... I mean, I love what Fraction's doing with Iron Man. It is nice to see other people working with the character as well.
Sure.
And I think Cornell and Swarzynski and Chaykin, for that matter, as well, all three of them are very capable of, you know, handling Iron Man stories. So.
And I think anthologies are really exciting. Because you
too.
Get... like a lot of little bits of stories.
Well, if you like those, and once again, going back to the black and whites, whenever I go to cons, I try and track down the Marvel Bizarre Adventures.
Sure.
That was such a great series.
Those were great. No, that's what I mean, man. It's a shame. And I guess, mm-hmm. you know, back then, Cadence, the company that owned Marvel, you know, had the structure behind it to put out those magazines and really do them at the drop of a hat.
Newsstand sales.
Times have changed since then. But no, those really are. The Planet of the Apes series that Marvel did back in the day, wonderful stuff. Again,
the
all
Hulk.
The Conan.
The Hulk magazine.
The Hulk black and white was fantastic. I was bummed when it went to color.
Yeah.
The black and white stories were better.
Dude, I mean, Moon Knight.
Yes.
Mm, right.
Well, it was Moon Knight. Yeah, I guess Moon Knight was when it was still black and white. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was the backup.
Moon Knight was, yeah,
yeah,
that's
it was
right.
The backup in those. And that, I mean, that's when that
Munch and
Sienkiewicz, awesome.
Exactly. Edited by Denny O'Neill.
Absolutely. All right, because last episode really was like all DC, and my persona on 11 o'clock gets...
You talk too much DC.
Stop.
Can you believe what Marvel is doing? Sorry, Vince. Can't help it.
I have a little bit of a reputation due to 11 o'clock of trying to balance things out over there, because I talk a lot of DC, because those three knuckleheads will talk about Wolverine and Deadpool until I bite my damn tongue off. a book that I have keep talking about is Stephen King's The Stand. It is the comic adaptation.
One of our favorite artists.
It is Mike Perkins.
Yay.
Who continues to just throw himself into this book. And
it's a gorgeous
book. Recounted the story, had a chance to meet Mike at a convention a couple years ago, and it was before this was, it was actually being announced that weekend, I believe. And he's like, well, you can't, don't say anything until tomorrow, but I'm going to do The Stand, and it's going to be like 36 issues or whatever it is. And he was so excited because he had been working on Captain America, which it was really Steve Epting's book, and this was a chance for him
the second artist on that book, which is a shame because he's a first rate. He's a front row guy.
Mike Perkins is so good.
And is pouring his heart out into this book. I completely agree with you, man.
And it's scripted by Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa. Mm-hmm. Is that how you say that?
And great playwright who I think started on the wrong foot with Marvel, and he did that fantastic Marvel Knights 4 that everyone kind of was like, eh. But he's actually a hell of a writer, and I think he's doing a wonderful adaptation of The Stand.
Doing great, and you can't forget fantastic Laura Martin colors on this. But anyone who's a fan of The Stand that hasn't picked this up, you really should. I think they have two hardcovers out now, and they break these down into miniseries. This is issue 4 or 5 of Soul Survivors, which is basically the getting the band together part of The Stand, where the survivors are on their way to Nebraska to meet Mother Abigail. And so this fourth issue is it's all about Mother Abigail and her history and you know how she grew up and kind of everything that she's doing.
Does it give you more information than the book did?
It's been so long since I read the book. I mean, we're talking like 15 years.
I haven't read the book. Should I reread the book before I read?
No, I would say no, because it's been 20 years since I've read the book. I mean, I was still in college when I read The Stand.
Yeah, I mean, the Stand that you buy today, I think it has been edited down like 600 pages.
Really?
Yeah, it's a tome.
And another interesting thing is this adaptation is so good, it frightened the book publishers, who kind of like got very mad that I think the book was, I don't know, are the hardcovers only available in the direct market? How does it work as far as the bookstores? Because I know there was a big flap.
That was more with The Dark Tower, I think.
Okay, because I thought was also with The Stand, because I know that King finally had to stand up and say, hey, listen, you want to keep me under contract? It's a 25-year-old book. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. You mean because it was like, so thorough?
Well, that they were afraid that people would start buying this and it would lessen the novel
hilarious.
Sales. But again, that's a testament to how good this is.
It's fantastic.
And again, King really did have to stand up and say, hey, calm down, okay? Everything's fine.
Grow the fuck up.
Exactly. And, you know, good for Stephen King. But no, it's really cool how well this has worked out. And I think gotten Stephen King fans excited about comics. Yeah. I do think it's working.
And I think whenever it's done, I think it's going to be a great... I hope they come out with an omnibus or something along those lines.
Well, I was going to say, they might have to publish a couple omnibus. Like, might have to be like a 3-volume kind
of
omnibus.
It's going
to
be
36 issues.
Something like that.
Yeah, I thought like six...
Yeah. I would love to see them do something with it, because it's going to read great together. Now, one other Marvel note here, and it's come up to the top of my stack here. Captain America 603 came out, but we have not talked about
602.
The 602 and the big flap about 602.
Yes, I don't know if I may be Rush Limbaugh for a second, if you're aware of what's been going on. Captain America, a symbol of our country, has been stolen once again by the liberal media. I don't like it. Nobody does.
You need to insert about 3 retards into that.
Exactly. These are the retards that should be upset. No, it's hey man. Yeah,
at 602 there was a tea party demonstration where the evil cap of the 1950s was recruiting militant numbskulls.
Well, what's going on is
join his cast of crazy homeland terrorists.
I'm going to pull out a magazine while we're talking, because I wanted to, because they're the group that and if I hurt your book, I'll give you mine, because I've got mine in my bag.
That's fine.
Because I want to get the name of the Watchdogs.
Yeah.
Now the Watchdogs have been in Marvel continuity before, and they are an established supervillain group. They are in, is it Nebraska? What
state
they're kind of
like, think of if AIM were all rednecks.
Pretty much, yeah. And it's, and you know, 50s Cap has fallen
it's
into.
It's kind
this
of an oxymoron,
group.
Isn't it?
But yeah, there was a big, there was just a big general protest scene, and some of the signs made allusion, you know, basically said, you know, yeah. teabagging and teabagging liberals and everything. And
which is so funny because Rich Johnson, they were like, oh, where do they get these signs from? Rich Johnson, I guess, found a bunch of pictures from teabag demonstrations
yeah. where.
And it's like, well, here are the signs.
Yeah, it's like, well, that's the thing. And yeah, the right wing media went nuts and said, hey, Captain America's our hero too. Nice to see you, you know, paint him that he's against this legitimate teabagging movement. Look, man, I understand the tea part. The tea, and I, first tea of all, I love the fact that we keep saying teabagging. Because
me too.
I'm glad you said
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Yes, we all know the 976 definition of teabagging. Which, where is the guy in the Republican room that goes, do you really know what teabagging means?
Wait, I don't know the 976 definition of 976.
All right, I'll have to. Wow. Okay. This
no,
might
of,
be a conversation.
No, of 976.
Well, those are like the sex lines. Those were the old sex before the internet. That's where
but
you get all your.
I
porn.
Do know the 976
young lady.
Definition.
Yeah.
Of
yeah. So there you go. Good. Thank God.
But now. Okay. Now
it's got to have a very difficult conversation with stuffed animals with you to explain that. I'm very glad that I avoided that.
Yeah,
okay, Jenny, here we go.
What kind of fucking stuffed animals do you have at your house?
Well,
you don't want to know.
Now, okay, I'm gonna take devil's advocate on this, but right wing media very upset that Captain America is being painted as a liberal, and
to the point where they're changing the art.
We have been very clear about this on the show. We live in Chicago, okay? If you cut me, I'm gonna bleed blue. All right, I am a left leaning liberal Democrat, but devil's advocate here. And I think it's good for a Captain America discussion as well. Captain America, I think, is at his best whenever he stands for the American ideal, period.
Yes.
And I think that the character needs to stay fairly moderate. Would you agree that
yes.
whether to not lean too hard one way or
yes,
the other.
Captain
America, I think, as the icon.
I'll be the voice of dissent because I'll give you a specific example. Steve Englehart in his mm-hmm. Secret Society story, which was a Watergate story. Sorry. I mean and also I would point out that, and I can appreciate in a perfect world that Captain America does represent an American ideal. Captain America was a New Deal Democrat. He was. Sorry. He was. It's just the way it is, kids. I'm sorry. And it's okay. And get mad at me. Feel free. I got no problem with that. I think Captain America is a bleeding heart liberal. I would go back to the conversation that Paul Jenkins' character from Civil War.
Yeah, the Facebook conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're like, yeah, Cap, have you ever been to a NASCAR race? Do you have a MySpace page and stuff like that? The Sally Floyd. I had to think about it for a second. But that's the thing. I think Steve Rogers is a bleeding heart liberal. I think he's been accused of being a bleeding heart liberal. I think the 50s Cap was created back in the 70s to be that counterbalance of this was, and again, taken to a different extreme, but this was the 50s Cap, who is a different character, who became a caricature of himself. And it's not that Steve is anti-red state, he is anti-fringe crazies. And again, the problem, as Rich Johnson pointed out, is not all the Tea Party people are crazy. It's unfortunately they've attracted fringe members, and they haven't managed to push them away for whatever reasons. There are crazy people on the liberal side. There are crazy people on the conservative side.
I think that's what it gets at. And it just and Brubaker writes pretty realistic and has a good idea what's going on out there. If 50s Cap is looking for people that are going to be these militiamen, watchdogs. You know what? That's probably where you're going to find them.
Right.
You know, it's
one thing. I think these people want. They see Captain America as the walking, talking flag.
Yes,
is exactly
right.
You know, that's what they want.
No, you're right about that, man. And that's the thing. And also, It is unfortunately typical of the fringe elements that get upset about these things. They see the surface and don't understand the complexities of the story.
Yeah.
And again, if you see that 50s Cap is mentally imbalanced, it is the watchdogs that are the bad guys. Mm-hmm. The Tea Party people are just as much victims of this wrong thinking and that are depicted in this specific story. It's not all the Tea Party people. Again, that movement is being corrupted by fringe elements that are hurting their central message. They admit it themselves. So for them to get upset, it's like, well, I'm sorry, this is no different than the other aspects of real world that Brubaker has been bringing to Captain America since he's taken over the book. He was dead on about the economic crisis, the oil problems, the real estate collapse. All that shit was in the book as it was happening. This is a real world. This is a Captain America real world book. And also, Marvel always likes to say, our books happen in the real world.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, the real world bit back, and Marvel's like, oh, yeah, sorry.
We'll change it in the collection. We'll change it in the collection.
And hey, man, you know, seriously, I totally get that. Marvel is a small, relatively speaking, as far as other media companies, Marvel is still small enough that if you piss off, you know, a bunch of red state people, it's gonna fuck with your sales.
They're owned by the mouse,
and that's true too. Okay. And that's gonna be interesting. Go ahead.
My favorite Captain America moment, maybe of all time, was from the awesome Daredevil Born Again by Miller and Mazzucchelli. My favorite line is at the end when he's meeting with the general, and the general says, "You know, the department holds you in the highest regard. We've always valued your commitment and your loyalty," and he looks at the general and has his hand on the flag, and he says, "I'm loyal to nothing, general, except the dream." And that is Captain America.
Right, nice. And that's true. He is above politics.
It's awesome. Do you know who owns this page?
No, who?
Andy Parks.
Good for Andy. That page. Wow, yeah. That's impressive. Yeah. No, I hope
Andy doesn't mind me
for,
saying that.
For as little as Captain America isn't Born Again, Miller very clearly defined the character, and not just that scene, but a few other scenes as well, and also the creation of Nuke. Like that crazed super soldier as the antithesis of Captain America
I would love to see a Nuke or Nuke-esque character pop up in Captain. Oh, I guess 1950s Cap.
Well, you know, Dan Way beat Brubaker to it, putting him in Wolverine. And who's to say that Nuke isn't going to pop up? Although I don't know. I hope. What I really hope happens from this is it doesn't hurt Brew from telling the stories that he wants to tell, because Bruce is smart guy.
You know what?
He's just
a
great writer.
Those blowhards, do you think they're going to read Captain America 604?
No.
Just let them. 24-hour news cycle. It was a slow news day.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing, and there are always going to be slow news days. So I do think there are going to be watchdog groups that will, you know, let the Michael Medveds and Sean Hannitys know. Can you believe this is happening again? I don't believe it. I don't like it. Where the hell is the Red Skull in this crap? That's what I want to know. And what is this Civil War nonsense? And where's this black guy doing hanging with Cap? I don't remember him. Nice. No, and that was obviously another bone of contention, too, that, you know.
The whole part where Sam walks into this bar, into this redneck bar, and ends up, you know, getting...
He's an IRS guy.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's...
We don't like tax men in these parts. And again, I can see the teabaggers getting upset.
Well, I mean, they focused on the fact that he was black, and not that he was an employee of the IRS. It's, you know, it could have been, you know... Oh, and another thing that
honestly, I do think that's what the Tea Party guy said, was like, oh man, this is an IRS guy. Hey, you know, obviously they're you're making fun of Tea Party people.
Yeah. Well, so. And the other thing I think is funny in the whole deal is that, you know, once again, mainstream media has absolutely no idea that this isn't Steve Rogers, that it's Bucky.
Well, but he's wearing the costume, and right now, for all intent purposes, he is Captain America, so it's okay. I mean, I great story. I love, and also I just love 50s Cap. I really do, and I love the idea that it's a damaged guy that is in his way trying to pursue the American dream.
It's fucking crazy.
And that's the best villains are the tragic villains, where you do understand and you sympathize with how they are damaged and stuff. And
also, isn't it good to have Captain America back on a regular schedule? So good.
I'm embarrassed to bring up DC after everyone specifically tried to say outside of DC. But last episode,
we were just talking comics.
Last episode, we talked about Batman and Robin, but it got taped over.
I'm glad you brought it back up, Jenny.
I did
want to
bring it back up because I do think it's awesome. And as long as we're talking about heroes in. Then they should be the same no matter who's wearing the costume. We should talk about Batman and Robin with Dick Grayson.
Absolutely.
Wearing the Batman costume. What do you guys think of that?
What do you got?
So, how's you feel about that?
It's something that got taped over last week. I love the fact that he's his own man, but he misses his friend.
Yes, and the story, I think, is going really well. And they have a new artist, 2 issues in, Cam Stewart. Cameron Stewart, I think he's doing a really great job.
The team from the Seven Soldiers Guardian. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Started with Frank Quietly, and then
Billy Tan.
Oh, Billy Tan.
Yeah, Billy Tan. Yeah. And then now.
There's a reason you didn't remember that.
I know. So now Cam Stewart.
What a cool story. Too.
Yeah, it really is. So in the first couple issues of Cam Stewart's run, he is in Batman and I guess not Robin right now because Robin is
broken back.
He
needs to heal up.
Damian?
Damian.
Yeah. Bruce's son.
Breakout character. Damian.
Grandson of Ra's al Ghul.
I've never liked a
Talia? Is it Talia?
Yeah, Talia. Yeah, that's right. Bruce Talia's kid.
For every reason that people didn't like Jason Todd is it was every reason I love Damian. If you're gonna do a little douchebag,
he's the kid you love to hate.
He's argumentative and he's warranted because he's Batman's son and
the grandson of Ra's al Ghul. Absolutely,
exactly, and Nightwing, who is now dressed as Batman.
It has been really fun to watch him gradually develop a respect for Dick.
Yeah, and become aware of what his costume means and what his part in the whole play is. I think that's really nice. And then, in these last couple issues, they're in England. And as we talked about last week, is it Black Knight and the Squire?
And Squire.
Mm-hmm. The Knight and
great,
Squire.
Great.
Just the Knight and Squire. Just the Knight and Squire.
Yeah. Great costume.
Actually, as we talked about last week, a little cameo by Batwoman.
Mm-hmm. And really scary chimney sweep.
They're terrifying, huh?
Yeah.
Any group of anything that should be innocent,
it's like
that is not innocent, is just terrifying.
Clowns and chimney sweeps.
Recent Wonder Woman with the murder of crows. Oh, scary. Yes. Those little kids. And then they just say things that shouldn't be right.
Well, and Pigface and all the circus freaks from the first arc and everything.
Oh, yeah. And Frank Quietly's drawings just scared me.
Outstanding. What I love, too, is this continuation of Final Crisis and taking the corpse and trying, again, Dick really saying, look, we need Bruce back.
Yeah.
And we've got to get Bruce back. Yeah. And him going to the lengths of dunking the corpse into the Lazarus pit.
Yeah.
But it was a crazy clone.
It's one of the oldest tropes in the book since the term cloning, was made public, but I love it and it didn't bother me at all. And in fact, I think it's great. And obviously, we learned that corpse that Superman had in his hands really wasn't Bruce.
Yeah. Where the hell did Darkseid have this time to clone all these different Batman?
Well, not like that's the first time he encountered Batman.
Yeah.
And actually, Batman...
come into my room over here. This is my Batman clone room.
Well, I want to know why, if he had the ability to save one, and he was like, well, one will... I can use one dead Batman. Why wouldn't he save all of them?
Well, they were all, mistakes. They were all failures.
No, I understood that. But, he says, get rid of all of them except save one because I can use one dead Batman.
I think you're finding out why.
Well, but I'm saying, why wouldn't you just keep all of them? I mean, there's limitless possibilities.
Maybe you need to clear out some space. Spring cleaning.
No,
Apocalypse really, there's a lot of clutter in Apocalypse, okay?
Here's the...
Granny goodness, Dwight needed to,
here's the pack rat in me. If you're going to keep one, you might as well keep them all. That's all I'm saying.
Interesting. No, I think...
Not for story purposes, but I just think that maybe we should...
Well, and it'll be interesting to see as the story progresses how... Because, right now, this clone of Bruce's is running around.
Yeah.
Seems to know enough. I mean, knows enough to go back to the cave and fuck with Alfred as the cliffhanger left us off and everything. So, yeah, how much does this clone know?
And what'll he do with Damien?
Absolutely.
I think Damien's going to take him out.
I love, too, how they are teasing, and in a lot of, you know, they've been doing it since the start of Batman and Robin, but they did it, too, in books like JSA. I love that they have those, like, almost like a television series where if you want to see scenes from the next issue, here's a couple panels and stuff. Great idea. Batman and Robin is, I mean, everyone was so excited when they even announced the idea of the title.
Yeah.
And it so hits the mark. It really does.
I tell you, maybe an under the radar book for a lot of people, Red Robin has been very good.
Yeah, Chris Yost, great writer.
And Raz, or Rash. Race. Race.
Well, I know people say race. I say Raz. I always say Raz.
Raz is back. And so
I say Raz because of the TV show, the cartoon.
But Raz was the movie. Was Dark Knight.
Yeah, but I didn't see it, so.
You saw Dark
Knight.
You
lose.
I didn't see the
or
the
Batman one, Begins.
I saw.
Tomato. Anyway,
O'Neill and Adams never corrected me when I said Raz, so I'm going with Raz.
There you go.
You know,
well, Raz is back, and I think that's going to have some very interesting ripple effects in Batman and Robin because obviously, well, that's Damian's grandpa,
of course. Right. So. Absolutely. Oh no, it was coming. I look forward to when Bruce comes back in 6 or 8 months from his odyssey of. Batman of many generations, and it'll be cool. Fun to see that come back.
What I love about Damien is that he really does believe that he could wear the cape and cap.
Yeah, now.
He really does believe
it.
And I love that.
He's a precocious 10-year-old.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's awesome. I have one that I want to talk about real quick. Avengers versus Agents of Atlas.
Yes.
It is written by Jeff Parker with absolutely phenomenal art from Gabe Hardman, Gabriel Hardman, and continues to. If you're an Avengers fan, especially an old school Avengers fan,
because it goes back and it's kind of filling in the gaps of story plot.
You need to get this last issue because because of some weird time fluctuation anomaly stuff. The Agents of Atlas have a big old throwdown with the original Avengers, and it is beautiful to look at. And Atlas characters are so much fun and have had to go from one miniseries to the next and through backups and that kind of stuff. And it was just announced that there's going to be a new ongoing with this art team of
the whole creative team, Parker and Hardman.
Plus Chris Somni.
Oh, even Chris
which
as well.
I'm
awesome.
Really, really excited about. But Avengers versus Agents of Atlas, I was a little skeptical coming in. And darn it, I shouldn't be because it's Jeff Parker. And then whenever I saw that it was Gabriel on art, I was like, okay, hell yeah.
Gabe and Jeff will be coming back to Word Balloon in March.
Chris
Actually, Gabe's
Somni?
Never been on.
Huh? That dude, Somni keeps getting better and better and better.
Yeah.
If you guys don't follow him on Twitter, follow him.
Chris is crazy.
Keeps posting insane stuff every week.
Have we mentioned the comic twart?
Twart, that's
great. Twart blog.
I don't even know what that is.
Because
Please
you're not on Twitter.
It.
Oh, it's Twitter art, yeah.
All this collection of artists all kind of challenge each other. And did Francesco Francavilla start it?
No,
I thought he did.
No.
But who do you know who started it?
It was Somni
and Hawthorne
and Mike Hawthorne and
Brett Weiser
and
Mitch Breitweiser and
Steve Bryant
and Stegman's in there and is
Andy,
it Stegman?
I think so.
Andy Kuhn.
Yep.
Salas.
Bunch of good stuff.
Ron Salas is there and Francesco Francavilla. Mm-hmm.
Francesco Francavilla just fucks with people on that because
you're right.
It's just like. Oh my God, that is like gallery quality, and he's putting these.
Oh, and Tom Fowler too. Yeah.
Fowler exactly. You know, and it's great because they'll pick an obscure character. Like a week or two ago was G.I. Robot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Tom knocked it out. Fowler did a great job. Beautiful G.I. Robot.
I saw Sammy's on DeviantArt.
There you go.
The Rocketeer.
Rocketeer was awesome.
Yeah, those were some
Zorro.
Good ones.
Oh, of course. A Week of Torpedo.
Torpedo was excellent, exactly.
Yeah. So check out the Twart. Comic Twart?
comictwarts.blogspot.com.
It's what?
I think it's comictwarts. or it's Twartz. I can't remember. Yeah. .blogspot.com. But if you look one of those guys up on, on Twitter, you'll find it.
Yeah, just look up comic Twart, and it is
another 976 number, Jenny. There you go.
Not Twart.
How you doing? All right.
So good. Aww. Hey, speaking of art, I'm gonna brag. I'm gonna show something off here. This is not good for.
Well, this will really work on audio.
Not good for radio, but I want to hear the.
Chris has a giant envelope for those who
good
can't
play
see
by play,
this.
Kyle, that's good.
I got a little. I found a little treasure on eBay this week.
What?
Check that.
Ooh, that looks nice.
I'm trying to think of who that is. Oh, it's Peter.
It's a.
What's that a page from?
This is a page from Web Slingers.
Cool.
It is J.G. Jones with Jimmy Palmiotti inks.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's Green Goblin, Sandman, Doc Ock, and the Vulture all attacking unmasked Spider-Man. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty. We'll take a picture.
Yes, I'm
we'll take a picture of Chris.
I'm bragging.
Chris and his page.
Yeah, you should put that on the next to the episode.
Nice put it in the show notes. But cool. The things you can find on eBay sometimes.
No, that's beautiful, man. Very, very cool.
Mm-hmm. I'm such a fool for original art.
I'm with you, man.
Gotta stop.
You know, Paul Galassi, out of the blue, speaking of Ra's al Ghul, as we were a couple months ago, sent me a page of that Devin Grayson prestige format 2-issue Ra's al Ghul story that Galassi drew.
Nice.
And it was just this great page of Alfred and Batman in the Batcave. And it was, you know, just out of nowhere. And it's like Paul Galassi. I'm like, oh my God, man. I love you since Shang-Chi, man. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
I'm very excited, though, and very happy that Marvel continues to support Atlas back to Avengers versus Atlas because,
you know, it's good.
Yeah. And because, you know, I mean, Parker has always been one of my favorites. He was literally among the first handful of Word Balloon guests because of his book The Inner Man. And as soon as I heard him and Len Kirk were bringing back these characters from that great What If issue, I was thrilled. And
what's funny is that the new series, and I want to get Parker's explanation.
3D Man.
3D Man is back. It's a new 3D Man.
Yes, and it's interesting because he always said that of the original group in the What If story, the one character that he didn't care for was the old 3D Man who was part of it and kind of retconned in.
Yeah, new 3D Man.
But now, I guess that's part of the story of why he's suddenly part of the team. But no, these are wonderful characters, and they're in the great hands of Somni and Hardman. And I'm very glad to see that Marvel continues to support this book because it is a critical favorite. It is a lot of podcasters' favorites and writers' favorites, and deserves a big audience. And hopefully, in this heroic age, it will finally have the audience that it needs.
Well, you know what? I totally forgot to mention this wonderful comic book convention that's coming to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. For the first time in over two decades, a national comics and entertainment convention is coming to downtown Chicago. Woo-hoo. Make your plans now to attend C2E2, the Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, this April 16th through the 18th. Join thousands of comic book fans, creators, and celebrities for a weekend of fun and excitement in the city of Broad Shoulders. Special guests for this year's show include Alex Ross, Jeff Smith, Jeff Johns, Mike Mignola, Ethan Van Sciver, Jenny Frozen, Kyle Weiss, and hundreds more of your favorite creators. Tickets are only $25 for a one-day pass and $50 for the entire weekend. For a full list of guests, events, and purchase tickets, you can visit c2e2.com. But wait,
there's more.
Thank you.
There's more.
C2E2 and Around Comics are giving you a chance to win tickets and exclusive C2E2 merchandise before the big weekend. We'll be giving away one amazing VIP package, 3 weekend passes, 5 exclusive C2E2 posters signed by creator and guest of honor, Alex Ross, 15 limited edition C2E2 shirts, and lunch with a Marvel editor.
It's true.
It's true. So, and I don't believe it's going to be like McDonald's or nothing.
No, and I don't think any tea bags will be allowed at the
luncheon
either.
I don't want it.
Entering the contest is easy. Just visit www.c2e2.com/aroundcomics and enter your name and email. That's all it takes. And please, if you're planning on making the trip in, go to that web address, c2e2.com/aroundcomics, and enter. We will be drawing winners from all of the entries on March 19th. Stay tuned for more exciting news about our official C2E2 after party plans and more ways to win tickets and exclusive merchandise by following C2E2 on Twitter. And if you follow them at C2E2, whenever they have new guest announcements, they blast them out on Twitter, so it's a great way to keep up with all of the guests that are going to be there.
Did you mention Wade in your list?
Yeah, Mark Wade was just announced. Yes. Gail Simone's going to be there. Chip Kidd is going to be there, which is cool.
Yeah, we saw Chip at the Printer's Row.
Mark Bagley is going to be there.
Mark Bagley.
That's awesome.
Never does conventions.
It's been a long time. I think the first New York show is the last time I saw Mark Bagley.
Yeah, Chris Ware is going to come out of his Ware cave.
Yeah, that's
it's
cool.
It's going to be great.
So. You know, and I blow you shit, Vince B, but I got to say, on the recommendation on 11 O'Clock Comics last week, he mentioned the McSweeney's collection that celebrated newspapers. And there's a wonderful comic section in there that includes a Chris Ware, I guess like a Rube Goldberg kind of fold in. You fold together a cardboard thing and it becomes like a toy. Mm-hmm. And it's like a rocket ship. It's outstanding.
That's awesome.
And just tons of other really great indie comic creators are in there as well.
Larson?
Cool.
Doing Savage Dragon?
Yeah, that's true. Eric Larson does Savage Dragon. But really, Dan Close is in there as well. Yeah. And a bunch of great indie people.
It's McSweeney's number 33. Yes. And if you can't find it at your comic shop or find a bookstore, you can get it. I actually just ordered it on Amazon. I think it's waiting for me at home. You can get it for like $10.
I heard it on the way in to work. Heard you guys talk about it. And there's a Borders right by my station downtown Chicago.
Sweet.
And picked it up on the way home. And it literally is formatted like a big Sunday newspaper. And beyond the comic section that is worth the price in itself, there are incredible magazines and incredible articles by very great literary people. Stephen King is in there describing the World Series. Michael Chabon is in there. Wonderful writers. And it's really, I mean, McSweeney's collections are always amazing literary anthologies. And this is no exception. And they've done wonderful volumes in the past that have celebrated comics and genre fiction. There was a wonderful pulp tribute that they did way back, I want to say issue 12 or 11.
Oh, wow.
That had a bunch of short stories from Neil Gaiman and Chabon and even Harlan Ellison and stuff that were all pulp kind of inspired.
I think you can
stories.
Get those back issues on Amazon.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And wonderful Howard Chaykin covers and illustrations inside that pulp McSweeney. So really cool stuff.
Sweet. All right. Awesome. Well, I tell you what, we need to wrap this one up.
All right.
I know you were going to talk Blackest Night Secret 6. It's awesome.
Yeah, just quickly say that it's great that Gail Simone extended a hand to John Ostrander and invited him back on a Secret Six to re-explore the Suicide Squad. It's been wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I really love seeing John's writing back in the DC Universe. He does great stuff for Dark Horse when he writes the Star Wars books. But for me,
Suicide Squad.
Well, it really, even going back to the Spectre and everything that Ostrander did for DC during those years, and the first comics years as well. I'm just a big John Ostrander fan, and I'm very happy to see that the man still has it, and he's kicking ass.
Yeah, that was a great, was it a three-issue? Yes. It started out, it was the Suicide Squad, the Blackest Night Suicide Squad issue, which was the resurrected issues. They came back and did one more issue of canceled titles.
Brought
the titles back from the dead. So it started with the Blackest Night Suicide Squad, and then it was Secret Six 16 and 17 or 17 and 18?
I think 16 and 17.
Is that the latest issue?
Yeah, I think, it's either the latest or there's one more after this. I can't remember. But regardless, it was Gail Simone, Ostrander, and Jim Calafiori doing the art.
Mm-hmm.
And
awesome.
Yeah. And especially it's great seeing the Bronze Tiger back with guys like Deadshot and his old Suicide Squad
The Bronze
bandmates.
Tiger Catman fight was awesome.
Outstanding.
It was great.
Bronze Tiger, one of my favorite Bronze Age characters of the DCU.
There you go. All right. If you want to contact the show, you can do so by emailing us at info@aroundcomics.com. You can give us a shout out. I've got some voicemails stacked up. We're going to get them next time, and if not, then we'll do it for the big blowout final recording.
Maybe
we
should do a special voicemail-only episode.
Hey, man, sometimes you got to clear out the cupboard, dude.
I understand.
You can call us at 1-888-977-5903.
And if you're teabagging, don't forget.
Oh, Rush, you crazy.
I'm starting to get kind of sad
crazy
here,
Chris. Bastard.
Huh? I'm getting a little sad here.
Why?
It's the last couple episodes. Two
more. The teabagging.
Well, that's sad too.
No, yeah, exactly. Honey, you're not doing it right.
There's always.
words of wisdom from Jenny Frison.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Yeah.
And she's blushing at her own comment, which is what I like even more. That's you're so funny.
My parents
you're
very
funny. Well, Kyle, don't be too sad because, A, you can listen to 11 O'Clock Comics and Tom versus The Flash, and you can also come back on Friday, March 5th.
Okay.
And Friday, March 19th are the next two.
Wow,
and,
two
and
left.
Last two.
We'll
last
be
two
here.
Recordings. So, yeah, it is kind of sad. But,
time marches on.
Time marches on, exactly.
Yeah, everyone's
exactly.
Still, it's no, nobody's dying. Nobody's no, leaving no. The podcast.
Happy tears. Happy tears.
Actually, right. It's probably good because if we went on for another year, Sal probably would have killed me. So this is good for my long-term health. Jenny, for people to find you on the internets.
JennyFrison.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's my name, plus.com.
Facebook. There you go. Mm-hmm. Very
and
simple.
And Facebook. I'm on Facebook and JFrison.DeviantArt.com.
Cool.
Kyle?
KyleVice.com, or just Google my name and you'll find all sorts of stuff about me.
Ooh,
yikes.
Okay.
Oh, cryptic.
WordBalloon.com. And John and myself and Kyle are all on Twitter.
Indeed.
And
you can see John WordBalloon.
You can see me now talk about curling a lot.
I saw that.
I have curling practice tomorrow at noon.
Wait till you see his shoes.
Can't wear those outside, man. Only on the ice.
I gotta be
only
honest, like ice. Monday and Tuesday I didn't mind watching on the Olympics, but really by yesterday I'm like, enough with the fucking curling. Can I see something else, please?
You just don't understand, John.
Clearly.
It's the game inside of the game.
I understand. It's the only game you can play while chain smoking, which I gotta respect, okay? So I think that's saying something. Clearly that's saying something. I'm not saying you don't work up a sweat. I see how hard those guys are sweeping.
Hey, man.
Don't get me wrong.
I tell you what.
Physically demanding. I'm not going to do it.
This is my new thing. I just end every fucking podcast I'm on with curling talk. Wow. That's what I'm doing at Around Curling. Here it comes, folks. The new AC. You know what it is? It's the years of shit that we've given our Canadian listeners about being Canadian.
Hey, man.
I'm making China. It up to them. I'm exactly. Making it up to them. So,
you're embracing their number two sport.
This is my olive branch to the Canadians. Oh, my God. Hillary Barta just walked
in.
Hey, Hillary.
Last minute.
All right. We'll be back again on Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime.
In between time.
Thank you, John. Thank you. We'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
That's right. Around don't curve. Forget, we'll have more as we come back to talk about what's going wrong in this country.
I'm a power-sweeping son of a bitch. I'll tell you. It's very good.
Here you go.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2010.